This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. The very best bits of today's show. It is a Wednesday, the 5th of June. What have we got for you? Well, lots of economic stuff to digest. Starting in India, shock election results. Narendra Modi has not won a majority for his party, the BJP. He's still going to be Prime Minister, but he's going to need the backing of a coalition. What does that mean for the markets? Well, they sold off dramatically in Tuesday's session. We'll get details on that. Then, the local economy. When we were on air, we had breaking news from the Purchasing Managers Index, PMI. It came in flat. It's still the weakest in 8 months. The guys at S&B blaming a couple of things. Partly the floods, continued fallout from that in the month of May, and Red Sea shipping constraints. Brandy has been speaking to one of the guys behind the report, the economist Ralph Wiegert from S&P. Then we look at Saudi Arabia. Interesting insights from Mead about the giga projects in Saudi Arabia. They are still booming, according to the editor Colin Foreman, and lots of UAE companies are getting in on the act. Tom's interview with Colin coming up. And finally, really interesting interview with Dina Al-Samhan, who's the chief business officer and co-founder of an AI startup called Keen.ai. Couple of interesting things. Dina, QAT National, ex-Google, spent 10 years in this region with Google, most recently heading up their Saudi business, and they've got funding from Fadi Gandour and Wamda Capital. He's, of course, a legend within tech funding here in the UAE. Full interview with Dina coming up. But first up, let's get the latest on India. Let's get the latest on the reaction to those Indian election results. Here's the opposition leader, Rahul Gandhi, speaking yesterday at a press conference when it became clear that his party, the India Alliance, had done better than expected. He's not won, he's not going to be Prime Minister, but done much better than many people expected. This was Rahul Gandhi speaking yesterday.
And this is the main thing that this election has said. The country has unanimously and clearly stated, we do not want Mr. Narendra Modi and Mr. Amit Shah to be involved in the running of this country. We do not like the way they have run this country.
Yeah, we've got to fact check that. The country did not unanimously say we don't want Narendra Modi because his coalition has won a victory and he's going to be the next Prime Minister. But I take the general point from Rahul Gandhi. It is a vote by the country. What are the markets doing? We're the Business Breakfast. That's what we care about. Fell off a cliff yesterday, down as much as 8% yesterday, but they did regain some of those losses. Right now, the Sensex is kind of flat this morning. It's up a couple of points, 72,500 points, the Sensex. So well off the record highs that we saw on Monday evening, but those declines have fallen. Similarly, Adani Enterprises, that's the company run by Narendra Modi's great friend and ally Gautam Adani, that was down as much as 20% yesterday, but recovered some of those losses. It's now down about 13.13% since Monday when there was euphoria that Modi was going to win a landslide election. But since then, Adani Enterprise is down about 13.13%. So there you have it. That's the latest on the Indian election. That's what's happening over there. What's happening over here in the UAE is very exciting because in 7 minutes and 9 seconds, Brandy Scott, what do we get?
Well, we get the Purchasing Managers Index for the UAE, a both forward-looking and lagging indicator of the health of our private sector. Set your alarms.
It is out on the dot at 8.15 this morning. John Walters, Brandy Scott's not the only one who's excited about it. So is John Walters, Senior Economist, Emirates NBD. We asked it in particular, what will you be looking for?
The index which measures activity in the non-oil private sector has remained well above the neutral 50 mark for some time, with values above 50 indicating an expansion in activity and values below 50 indicating a contraction. We'll be looking to see whether the index ticks up once more after falling marginally in April, likely as a result of the severe weather conditions experienced across the region. Apart from the headline number, the value of the new export orders subcomponent will also be interesting to see after it turned contractionary in April after a 13-month run of growth.
Interesting that Jean's looking out for the weather impact in that report. We will have the details at 8.15. Tom, you've been looking at the Saudi Arabian economy. You've been speaking to the guys at Middle East Economic Digest.
Yeah. We had Colin Cole joined us a little earlier on his way to the airport. Colin Foreman is the editor of Mead. The reason we got him in, because their latest updated report is out on giga projects. They've got the latest data out. I asked Cole, what does the data tell? Well, us, developers, investors alike.
Well, it tells you what the opportunities are. It tells you what work's actually happening. I mean, one of the challenges in the region is there's a lot of announcements with very large numbers put to them, and you know, you need to then try and work out what's actually going ahead or not. So we have a team of people that track sort of contract award and tendering activity. So it will show you which projects are actually moving ahead, and perhaps more importantly, the pace that they're moving ahead as well. So it shows you what, you know, A, what the opportunities are, but then it helps you get a handle on what the real opportunities are as well.
Right, that's me told. So NEOM still on?
Yeah, I mean, NEOM is one question, but it's many questions. There's different components of NEOM. So, you know, it's, I think they say it's an area the size of Belgium. So you've got Trojena, which is moving ahead. It's hosting the Asian Winter Games in 2029. The largest contract award for construction we've reported on was awarded at the very beginning of this year for some dams for a lake there, which was $5 billion.
And a rather existential question for a Wednesday morning. Is the line still a line?
I don't think anyone in construction seriously thought they were going to build a 170-kilometer-long building by 2030. Yeah, okay, they're delivering part of it, but I mean, just to put it in perspective, how big the bit that's still going ahead, okay, it's probably going to be about 2.4 kilometers. But if you use a Dubai example, if you went from the first interchange by Dubai Mall, went up to the exhibition center, that's about 2.5 kilometers. If you then imagine that on either side of Sheikh Zayed Road, which is about 200 meters wide, a continuous building that's 500 meters tall, that's the scale of what they're still planning to do by 2030.
There you go. People ask on a daily basis, how long is a piece of string? How long is a line? Define it. Colin Foreman, editor, Mead.
Serena Kelly's with us in the studio. Morning, SK.
Morning, guys.
Right then, let's get more on the elections that you've been covering. We've had Mexico over the weekend. We've had India over the past 24 hours or so. So we got those results there. So looking forward to the next one, which is the UK election, one of the next big ones in about a month's time. And the two protagonists have gone head to head.
Yeah, you've had the first TV debate. So current UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, leader of the Tories, and Sir Keir Starmer, Labour leader. So the two went head to head. It was live on ITV. They clashed on a number of issues, the economy, the NHS, tax, the cost of living and immigration.
Why are the numbers this year 10,000 record numbers? Why is that?
Because this
it's
is
on
a
your
challenge.
Watch.
This is a growing challenge, but I've got a plan to deal with it
what
because I'm going to put people
it?
On planes. What are you going to do with them? I can tell everyone what I'm going to do. You might not like it, but I've got a plan. Okay.
So after the first live debate, a YouGov poll suggests the Prime Minister came out on top by 51%, 49% for Sir Keir Starmer, but that general election happening July 4th. So watch this space.
Big focus this morning on the show on the Stadium of Economics. Serena, I'll get to your story in a second, but Tom, in just over 20 minutes' time, you're speaking to a Dubai-based company that have built the temporary stadium in New York for the Cricket World Cup.
Yeah, I'm going to get a definition on this one because I mean, obviously they have a big influence here in Dubai. The Arena Group, the CEO of the Arena Group is Paul Berger. He's the group CEO, and a lot of the group are based here. But obviously it's an international event solution business with established reputation around the world. They do events basically around the world. They've got divisions around the world, but it's nominally run from here. So we are speaking to him. Why? Because he's just built a big, don't call it a pop-up, because it's not a pop-up. It's a demountable cricket stadium in a park in New York that's going to host India versus Pakistan. There's a lot of working parts there, I tell you. It's a demountable stadium in the middle of New York that's going to host 35,000 plus Indian and Pakistan cricket fans.
That interview is happening just after 8:30. Serena, I mentioned Stadiumnomics because you're looking at Sharjah.
Yeah, they've announced plans to build two football stadiums, but what's setting them apart is that they're mountaintop stadiums. So here's what we know so far. Both will be located between 850 to 900 feet above sea level, built in mountainous areas. So, but more details after 9 o'clock.
I've just been going through the stack of press releases that build up And I've found that Tom's international trend that he spotted this morning has been localised by one of our oldest cake manufacturers. I'm going to tell you more in a moment.
All that to come.
It's big news for me. In the 40 seconds before the PMI drops, I want to tell you that Tom's international food trend that you spotted, what was the portmanteau that has been found in the beverage world?
Spicy,
which is?
Sweet and spicy.
Just got a press release from Mr. Baker, the original cake manufacturer here in the UAE, to say that they are putting out a limited edition sweet and spicy chili chocolate cake.
Oh, hello.
They say swicey.
So they were listening to Tom Urquhart at 6:35 this morning, and by 8 o'clock they've baked the cake and put out the press release.
That is master baking.
There is indeed master baking from Mr. Baking. I can get you into an exclusive tasting event if you want.
You've got to say all that very carefully.
I know exactly. I suddenly thought of that.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
And we're looking at what's happening to the private sector here in the UAE this morning, because we have the new Purchasing Managers Index for the UAE out from S&P. They do this every month. They have a look at what's happening in the non-oil private sector through a series of interviews. We're very pleased to be joined on the line now from Germany this morning, waking up early to speak to us, which we appreciate, just moments after that report is out, by Ralf Weigart, who's MENA Economics team lead for S&P Global Market Intelligence. Morning, Ralf. It's lovely to speak to you again.
Good morning, Brandy.
So April's headline PMI data fell to an 8-month low on the back of the rains that we saw here. And if we look at May, it's come in at exactly the same number, 55.3. I understand why the flooding slowed business activity the month before, but why haven't we moved up from that?
Well, there is a story behind that number, of course. And the story is that business have scrambled to actually meet demands of their customers. And they have racked up considerable backlogs, and they're now working down that backlog chain. And this is precisely why the index hasn't moved at all between May and April.
So it's still a knock-on effect from those rains 2 months ago.
It is to a significant extent, and there's also a story behind that, because the backlogs have been moving up already before the floods. So there was an increase of backlogs from 50 in December, 50 around 50 in December to 56, 59 in February and March. So this was partly related to the attacks to the Red Sea blockade and the congestion that was suffering that producers in the UAE were suffering.
Okay, so looking at these numbers, tell me if I'm putting the story together correctly here, because you talk about a record uplift in outstanding business levels, robust sales pipelines. But as you say, companies facing relentless pressure on their actual business capacity. The business coming isn't in as good. It's the ability, for those reasons you've mentioned, to fulfill it.
Exactly. Yeah. They have strong, strong demand from customers. They are really busy in fulfilling the demands of their customers, and that's what keeping their activity level rather high.
What does all of this mean for pricing pressures, Ralf? What have you seen?
Well, pricing pressures are also increasing. We saw import prices going up significantly from 52.9 to 55.5. Also, output prices are up. So there is some element of pricing pressures in the works. But I think the pricing pressures will abate at some point in the next couple of months.
Right. And I'm taking from this report that backlog of work and the need to get through it has been good for employment.
Indeed, yeah. Employment, there are significant hirings are ongoing. in the UAE, and this is of course also wages are increasing, but not significantly. So, but they're just up a little bit.
Right. Okay. Talk to me also what these purchasing managers that you've been speak to are seeing going forward. Where are confidence levels at the moment?
The confidence levels are rather high. When we look at future output, for instance, it hit a new annual high of 60.3 points. So this is a rather high level, and this speaks to the optimism that is currently very much at stake in the UAE private sector.
Right. OK, I'm looking at some comments here from the senior economist that you work with, David Owen, on this report. He's talking about the focus of the next few months being still recovery from the floods. What do you expect to see in the next few reports?
Yeah, I mean, this is always difficult to predict, right? But I think, we will see likely an increase of the PMI. This is my expectation. Since the UAE non-oil economy is still growing very solidly, this will translate into a strong PMI reading in the next couple of months. We also have the outlook from the survey also robust, so I don't see a reason for why, and that combined with a recovery from the flooding, I don't see a reason why the PMI should decline significantly in the next couple of months.
Right. So those 2 8-month lows that we've seen now 2 months in a row, circumstantial rather than a trend?
Yeah. I mean, that is related to the flooding. If that didn't happen, we would be probably, a little bit higher. It's hard to quantify how much higher, but I think this is the reading would at least a little bit better.
Ralph Weingart, MENA Economics Team Lead and in charge of Economics and Country Risk there for S&P Global Market Intelligence. We appreciate your time this morning. Those numbers just out in the last 15 minutes. An extraordinary report, given that the knock-on effects of those rains and flooding are still very much being seen through the private sector and their backlog of work at the moment.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it ties in with the report that Tom was chatting about with the guys from Mead earlier on. What was it? Colin Foreman's comment to you was that he put it better than me, but the resource demand out of Saudi Arabia is insatiable. I'm paraphrasing there. But it sounds like, from what Ralph was saying, that those bottlenecks, whether it's shipping in the Red Sea, whether it's the floods in Dubai, means it's difficult to satisfy that demand.
It's a bit of a perfect storm. Pun fully intended, with this report. I mean, what he's basically saying here and what this report is saying in a lot of words is that you had high orders anyway because the economy is ticking along. You had supply chain issues as a result of the Red Sea crisis, which was already impacting the ability to fulfil a lot of those orders. The rains came, things flooded. That has put pressure on businesses. They've now got relentless pressure on their business capacity and their backlogs. They're hiring people to deal with it. But it is almost a problem of success, if you like, as much as the rains.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Colin Foreman is the editor of Mead. He's been kind enough to find time in between his hectic travel and work schedule to join us live here in studio. Colin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to have you. If ever we needed eyes on what's going on all things construction down in Saudi Arabia, couldn't ask for a better guest. You've got the Saudi Giga Projects May 2024 data to hand. I mean, so much to dive into in terms of the Giga Projects and the major projects taking place down there. If you were to sort of mark, let's call it, well, we're coming to the summer holidays just around the corner, so coming to the end of the academic year, how would you mark it in terms of the last calendar year? Still on track?
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of contract award. I mean, the report says there's approximately 880 billion worth of projects planned and underway in Saudi Arabia, and so far they've awarded about 80 billion. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do, but they've made substantial progress. I think anyone that's working in Saudi Arabia at the moment will tell you that it's a busy market for construction, and it's a market that's hungry for resource. So it's hungry for people and hungry for materials and services and contractors. So it's a growing market with a lot of opportunity at the moment.
Are the very phrase giga project, it's like the old seven-star hotel phrase, isn't it, that we penned many years ago. It's one of those ones that takes a little getting around and defining. It's something that has come into our narrative as a result of what's going on in Saudi Arabia. But has the sort of definition of what makes a giga project changed or not?
There's lots of different ways to look at that question. There's the five official giga projects which Saudi Arabia has, which are PIF entities, which are the giga project developers. And then there's a lot of other projects that are very large scale that you could probably say are giga projects as well. So there's not really a clear definition of what a giga project is, but there are five official giga projects if you wanted to look at those five. But then there's a whole host of other projects that are very large in scale as well.
Your data and the latest May 2024 data looks at upwards of 20, just more than 20 projects as well that are ongoing at present. I mean, again, it's like how long's a piece of string, but can you quantify the value of those projects at the moment or not?
It's very difficult because a lot of it will depend on obviously how much it actually costs to build. Quantifying it is difficult. But as I said, there's a $880 billion worth of work that's planned and underway in on that sort of giga project program.
In terms of the data that you get here from the Giga Projects 2024 update, you did it last year, you've updated it again this year. What do you use this data for? What does it tell us, developers and investors?
Well, it tells you what the opportunities are. It tells you what work's actually happening. I mean, one of the challenges in the region is there's a lot of announcements with very large numbers put to them, and you know, you need to then try and work out what's actually going ahead or not. So we have a team of people that track sort of contract award and tendering activity. So it will show you which projects are actually moving ahead and perhaps more importantly, the pace that they're moving ahead as well. So it shows you what, you know, A, what the opportunities are, but then it helps you get a handle on what the real opportunities are as well.
Obviously you focus on each of the individual projects. Mm-hmm. One that gets talked about the world over is NEOM. What's the latest from NEOM?
Yeah, I mean, NEOM is one question, but it's many questions. There's different components of NEOM. I think they say it's an area the size of Belgium. So you've got Trojena, which is moving ahead. It's hosting the Asian Winter Games in 2029.
That's happening.
The largest contract award for construction we've reported on was awarded at the very beginning of this year for some dams for a lake there, which was $5 billion. So yeah, very much happening there. You've then got the line, which you were talking about before I came on air.
I mean, that's been in the international press recently, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, yeah. The line's quite a controversial project. I mean, it really is quite a provocative design. It's really changing the way people think about things. I think my comment on a lot of the coverage recently is, you know, you've got to remember that I don't think anyone in construction seriously thought they were going to build a 170-kilometre-long building by 2030. So it was always going to be a case of what bits are built first. And in terms of it, if it being cut in size, yeah, okay, they're delivering part of it. But I mean, just to put it in perspective, how big the bit that's still going ahead, okay, it's probably going to be about 2.4 kilometres. But if you use a Dubai example, if you went from the first interchange by Dubai Mall, went up to the exhibition centre, that's about 2.5 kilometres. If you then imagine that on either side of Sheikh Zayed Road, which is about 200 metres wide, a continuous building that's 500 metres tall, that's the scale of what they're still planning to do by 2030. So it's still an enormous project. And just in terms of height, we get a little bit blasé with height since the Burj Khalifa, but 500 metres is still a very tall building. I think Emirates Towers is 355, the tallest. So it's significantly taller than Emirates Towers and continuous all the way from the exhibition centre down to the Dusit and on both sides of Sheikh Zayed Road. So still an enormous project, but it's not 170 kilometres by 2030, but that's still planned to be done in the future.
Speaks of the innovation, also indicates of the ambition that is coming out of the kingdom at the moment. in terms of contracts, are contracts still being handed out, or have all the contracts gone now?
No, I mean, still a lot of contracts to go. In fact, I think the challenge is not so much availability of contracts, it's people to take on the contracts. I think most of the development companies that are handling these projects, the challenge is finding contractors that will take on the work. So we've been working with quite a lot of developers, trying to help them source contracting resource from in Saudi Arabia, the region, and further afield. It's a real problem trying to find enough people, contractors and materials to deliver all these projects.
So to that end, is your reading that recruitment is still going on as well? It's a big talk around dinner tables here.
Yes, very much so.
What about the challenges? Obviously, we've seen all the potential there, but your data also throws out key drivers. We see that as well. The big challenge moving ahead?
I think the thing that's changed in the market over the last 6 months has been, as I said, we've been talking about a market that's hungry for resource. I think what's changed in the last 6 months is it's now hungry for investment a lot more than it was previously. So I think there's a real push now to secure investment into these projects. They were really being funded almost exclusively by the Public Investment Fund, and I think now they want to get alternative sources of financing and investment coming in to help sort of lighten the load for them directly.
Just finally, we've got, 30 seconds left with you as well. Just in terms of the projects ongoing, and obviously we know that they are across a number of different, you know, tourist, residential, commercial, industrial. There's no focus on one. Is there obviously more being done on certain projects or not?
I mean, you have to really go back to the very beginning of all this, and it's Vision 2030. Right. And if you look at Vision 2030, it covers pretty much every sector you can think of, not just economically, but also talks a lot about social change. So one thing we haven't mentioned is sport and the sort of drive to get people more engaged in sport, which is one of the reasons why they've been investing so heavily in sports and World Cups and things. So, yeah, it's a full court press across the whole economy, really.
Across the board. Colin, bless you. Thanks very much indeed for your insight. Colin is the editor of Mead Saudi Giga Projects. May 2024 report is out.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Keen AI ticks a couple of boxes for us this morning. It's homegrown. It's working on AI. It's working on e-commerce. It's doing it in Arabic, and it's just raised more than $2 million in pre-seed funding. We are very pleased to be joined now by Dina Al-Samhan, who is the Chief Business Officer and co-founder of Keen.ai. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Remind us what Keen has been set up to do.
So Keen.ai is a generative AI native platform that helps e-commerce businesses of all sizes unleash the power of AI to boost their performance through easy-to-use products that are self-optimizing and multilingual.
Right. So as a customer, what would that look like for me? What would happen differently when I was online shopping?
So as a customer, this means that you're able to find the products that you want much quicker in a very accurate manner. It also means that product discovery becomes something very, very smooth. So if you're looking for something, it's basically like talking to a very, very experienced sales consultant, really.
But on my phone or on my laptop?
Indeed, online.
And what does it mean for your customers? What does it do for them that they weren't able to do before?
Well, I mean, for them, a few things, right? So a lot of businesses over the past year have been wondering, okay, how do I use AI? They know that it's integral to use AI, but they're not sure how to do it, or maybe they don't have the resources to do it. For them, using our products means that they get to basically use plug-and-play AI products to really, really upgrade the product discovery. Again, product discovery is anything that helps users find what they're looking for on your site or exposes them to product they may want. And we believe that it's fundamental to the success of online businesses. I mean, imagine having the best product catalog, but if product discovery is poor, the opportunity cost could be very high. I'll give you just an analogy. Imagine having a store that has the best products, is amazing, but is in the middle of the desert, right? Discovery is really, really key.
I'm with you on that. It takes me 13 clicks to order the exact same coffee every morning from the app I order it off. Every morning it asks me if I might like cream, if I might like chocolate powder, if I might like sugar, if I might like a different milk. would I like a juice shot with that? And it's just like, I literally do the same thing every day.
Right. Well, there you go. So being able to really understand customer intent, but also develop a fundamental, holistic understanding of the product catalog of online businesses, putting these two things together makes for seamless product discovery.
Okay, so this has earned you some money. You've raised $2.2 million in a round of funding. There's a bunch of people who have put money into it, but we are most interested in the company that has led it, which is Wamda Capital. We have Fadi Gandour in here quite a bit. He is a veteran of not just investing, but in tech here in the UAE. What does having him back you bring to the table?
Oh, I think it brings, in addition to the funding, of course, it brings a lot of experience in the venture capital landscape, but also in tech, right? He is exposed to so many different companies. He knows the fundamental challenges that startups go through, and he's been a wonderful advisor to us.
Why have you based the company here? I mean, you're ex-Google. You ran the search giant's media business in Saudi Arabia, oversaw that. Your CEO is based in Silicon Valley. So why stick the HQ here in the UAE?
So our CEO is not based in Silicon Valley. We're all based here. I'll give you two reasons. One, I think, for starters, we believe that there's a fundamental issue, let's say, with Arabic products. So the Arabic language is, like the region that it reflects, like the MENA region, it's diverse, it's complex, it's highly nuanced. So our AI products that power, basically our AI models that power all our products, they are built to deeply understand the nuances of the Arabic language, which is something that we believe is quite lacking with a lot of the products out there. We saw this gap and we decided to really try to solve it for e-commerce businesses here, to give them a much more seamless way to connect with their audiences. One reason. The second reason is really, I mean, our engineers, we have engineers that really have this is what makes us really stand out is our technical and engineering and scientific firepower. Our engineers have worked across the globe in companies like Google, DeepMind, Microsoft, Facebook. They have PhDs in, you name it, right? Natural language processing. Several PhDs we have on the team in natural language processing, reinforcement learning, information retrieval, all things that are fundamental to product discovery and to e-commerce businesses. The common thread is that they all come from the region, right? So they all want to give back. And I believe this is a really nice differentiator that is strong and very meaningful.
Okay, well, let me put that a different way then. You're QAT.
Correct.
And again, you ran the Google business for Saudi Arabia. We've been talking about competition between the different Gulf states this morning. Why the UAE rather than your native Kuwait or KSA?
Well, I mean, I think the UAE, or it could be easily based in Kuwait or KSA or the UAE. The UAE is, let's say, a great center that services the region. I mean, think about Google, right? Google MENA services the entire MENA region, not just the Gulf, but really also North Africa. It's honestly, in this day and age, it's almost arbitrary where you base your business as long as you're somewhere that makes running a business easy. And I think the UAE is really apt at doing that. It's a place where it could work very well for anyone to be based here. It's it provides a lot of diversity and different options. And like I said, it's really an epicenter. Think of, I don't know, Dubai Airport, for example, right?
But that's interesting. You raise an interesting point. Do the borders matter less to you? Is it less important where you are from one place to another? Is that just not a distinction anymore?
To me as Dina, or to me as Keen?
As Keen.
Well, as Keen, again, the UAE, as well as Saudi, if we compare it to other states, it's a place that really focuses on making, on facilitating a lot of things for businesses to make running a business easier, you know, even the process of issuing visas for people and things like that. So it's not, let's say, it's not irrelevant, but Saudi is another really amazing place where people could be based. We happen to be here. I live here. My co-founders are here. So we based it out of here.
So what are you going to do with the money? What will that $2.2 million allow you to do at this stage?
Well, we want to take this this pre-seed funding and further develop our platform. We want to further develop our product suite, and we want to scale our reach. That's what we plan to do with it.
Give me some more detail about that. Where do you want to go when you scale?
Where do we want to go when we scale? So, look, our products are, first of all, multilingual. Secondly, you know, products like dynamic content generation or intelligent search or smart recommendations. These could be really sometimes language agnostic, and they're easily scalable. We just need to develop the right tech to make it as scalable as possible.
And how big could you get?
We want to prove that innovation can really come from this region, and we want to we have our eyes. Of course, we want to establish ourselves in the MENA region. This is where we're from. We have our eyes set to be a global company. I think this could become very, very big.
Thanks for joining us so much this morning. The Queen of Keen. We have Keen.ai. Dina Al-Safan is the Chief Business Officer and co-founder. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.